So we are pleased to have Hamid Afsar today from IPM Tehran, and he'll talk about the paper, a paper he wrote November 2019, which was titled Flat Space Holography and Complex S5K. So he'll give this seminar on two-dimensional holography beyond JT gravity. So Hamid, please start. You can start the talk. And if you want to ask any questions, please just unmute yourself. Go ahead and ask Hamid your questions. So Hamid, please take it on. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to give a talk. This talk is based on basically two works that I did last year, and hopefully another work that would come up soon. So, yeah, please stop me if you have any question. So in the first slide, I want to give an outlook. First, I will introduce and motivate my work based on the boundary holographs. I need to review the JT gravity and the Schwarzian action, and then I will introduce the So it's basically on the ADS, and we want to construct models of quantum gravity in flat space time specifically. And for doing this, low dimensions can help, as usual, because there are less technical problems, but you can still address some important questions in quantum gravity. So another motivation is to extend the correspondence between JT gravity and S5K model to the case of flat spacetime, and in particular the link between the two, which is the link between the gravity side and the boundary theory, is usually these Schwarzian-like actions. So we want to determine what would be the analog of the Schwarzian action in flat space. Okay. For doing this, we use the 2D gravity, 2D Dilaton gravity. 2D Dilaton gravity is solvable, and still is rich enough to accommodate holographic features. So we use the famous, introduced the famous example of the JTSYK correspondence, which, as I said, the link between the two is this Schwarzian. Apart from the holographic correspondence, it is also a rich gravity model, which can provide simple models for semi-classical black hole formation or evaporation. We can address the developments associated with the page share reason per page share, for instance. So the 2D gravity and the 2D Dilaton gravity can be considered as dimensional reduction from higher dimensions, where the Dilaton plays the role of the radial direction. So if you do the radial direction, but and at the same time go to the near horizon limit, then and expand the action to the linear order in X, where X is the deviation of the dilaton from its value at the horizon. If you do this in ADS, you get JT gravity, and if you do this in flat space, you get the so-called CGHS model in Einstein frame. So you realize that the difference is basically the appearance of X in the two actions are different. In the first case, X is multiplied by this quantity RH minus squared, which is the value of the horizon radius. But in the flat case, that quantity is not multiplied by X. And S0 is basically the Euler character of the two-dimensional manifold. Okay, this was from the gravity side. Now we want to ask what kind of one-dimensional holographic model we should expect from the boundary point of view. Since the holographic description going to describe the near horizon, then in principle, we demand finite temperature in the boundary, so we are dealing with the Euclidean time. This means that all fields of the system are living on a circle. So this means that all fields of the system, of the one-dimensional system, are in some representation of diffeomorphism of S1. So they are arranged either as vectors, functions, or any kind of tensor on S1. As an example, a diffeomorphism F itself is a vector, and a scalar field G, for instance, can be a function. So these fields in principle can form a group. For instance, f of tau itself as a vector on S1 formed the Virasoro group. And we know that the Virasoro group is centrally extended. So in general, these groups can be centrally extended. So in the case of, if you also add the functions on S1, then groups are centrally extended. But semi-classical holographic degrees of freedom from the field theory side, this doesn't mean that the field theory is going to cover the whole group, but it only covers this. You can understand it from the point of view of the fact that the boundary theory usually this, at the semi-classical regime is in IR, for instance, and some of the symmetries are broken. So so you expect that semi-classical holographic degrees of freedom have a description in terms of Goldilocks modes of the broken symmetry. Of the broken symmetry of the full group. So these fields are going to live on a quotient space where G hat is the full extended group, centrally extended group, but and G zero is a global sub. Of that Virasoro, that centrally extended group. So in principle, you hit up the group where the fields are living in. And these quotient subspaces of the group, which are called quadrant orbits, as I said, can be constructed, can be constructed and studied some systematically, and in principle you can even study the quantum mechanics using the full partition function of this theory, which in this case turns out to be one loop exact. The reason for the partition function to be one loop exact is basically because these cohesion orbits are symplectic manifolds. This I refer to Stanford Witten 2017, where this has been shown. And the one loop partition function for some examples has been computed. So in principle, if we do the one loop partition function, we are done. As an example, the short syntax and the total group, is playing the role of the central extension, and the one loop partition, in principle, path integral you need first of all the action and also the obtained from the fact that the quadrant orbits are choose G0, which was the global part of the a global subgroup as a set to R, then the one loop you can determine the one loop partition function, which is 1 over beta to the 3 half. So in this case, the T0C in the action would be fixed in terms of the central term and the periodicity of the what first in theory is a generalization of this action, where you have two more co-cycles. So instead of having only d(f(s1) and instead of dealing only with d(f(s1), you have functions on S1, and also you have three more co-cycles. So what is written here as T0 kappa or P0 kappa, they are basically the zero modes of the covectors T and P, their contribution to the second and third co-cycle. So the first co-cycle, we remember that it was the Virasoro co-cycle. So in this case, the maximal four-dimensional global subgroup can be either SL2R times U1 or SO2, which is like the central extension of the Euclidean group, two-dimensional Euclidean group. And in this case, the one loop partition function can be calculated, which is 1 over beta squared, if these appropriately in terms of the co-cycle, in this case alpha, which is a
here, as an example, I'm trying to write the JT gravity in the BF formulation. In the BF formulation is nothing but the first order formulation of the theory, where you trade the spin connection and Zweibein or Vierbein independently, and upon the torsion constraint you can relate them basically. So the algebra for the JT, the algebra for the BF theory for JT gravity, which is going to give you the JT gravity, is the SL2R or the ADS2 algebra, where P with J gives P, P with P gives J. And in order to write the BF theory, you also need a metric on the algebra, which in this case is simply the Killing form of the algebra. And as you see, in the bulk, the expression in the parentheses are basically zero on shell. As a constraint, because the equation of motion for x a and x determines them to be zero. So in the bulk, you have nothing in the end in the second order formulation, but you have the boundary theory. So the boundary action is the whole action for JT, which of course depends pretty much on the boundary condition that you impose. Can Jamie and Jackie also have a construction for BF theory in flat space time? This is based on the centrally extended Poincaré algebra, two-dimensional Poincaré algebra. So you also need these central extensions Z, the generator Z, and this new generator would help you to write an invariant bilinear form for the algebra, and upon using the metric on the algebra, you can write the BF theory. Pay attention that that in this case the variation of XA again gives you the torsion constraint, but you have the omega, which is the Ricci 2 form, which in two dimensions is proportional to Ricci scalar, and you have a new gauge field C, which is going to couple to the generator Z. And this means that if you integrate out the torsion constraint in the second order formulation, you have a model which is very close to CGHS, but it's not exactly CGHS. That's why we call it CGHS hat, where C is a gauge field. In this case, the equation for C actually tells you that y is constant, and if y is constant, then this term is basically boundary term. So on shell they are equivalent, but of course off shell they are different. Next, you have to impose boundary conditions. A boundary condition that would satisfy the field equations, which in this case is the field equation is R equals zero, right? The field equation for X would give you R equals zero. The field equation for C gives Y equal constant. And the field equation for X is Laplacian something on X being zero, but in this specific gauge, this where metric is written in Eddington-Finkenstein gauge, actually X has a very simple form, and the equation of motion for C is DC. So you have to vary Y. So it tells you that DC is proportional to the square root of determinant of the metric, which in this case is one. So this C equal R du is going to satisfy that equation as well. So then you can ask if how these solutions are preserved under diffeomorphism, under a general diffeomorphism. And you find basically this vector here. And you can also ask how the free functions P and T are going to transform under this diffeomorphism, which is given, the transformation is given here. Then you can ask what is the group of these symmetries. So if they are going to close the algebra in the sense that they are going to preserve the boundary condition, then you can ask what type of symmetries, what is the group of what is the group associated to these symmetries. So in order to answer this, you can Fourier mode, you can Fourier transform these three functions T's, and you can use the fact that variation of the function of the smeared function would be the commutator of that smeared function with another with another function that you have varied with. And upon using this, you can simply find the algebra that the Fourier modes are going to satisfy. This is a twisted warp Witt algebra. So you have the Witt algebra, you have a twist term in the commutation relation of L and P, and you have a, you have P and P zero. From the transformation, you could also expect this. This part is basically saying that P is a dimension one, conformal dimension one generator. T is, as usual, conformal dimension two, weight two generator, and then this epsilon double prime and sigma double prime is giving you this n squared, and this n is basically the just because of shift in the zero mode of P, and the rest is are just the bulk piece of the transformations. So this indicates that the probably the CGHS model under these boundary conditions is of a Warp-Schwarzian type, because this has the Warp-Schwarzian Warp-Virasoro type algebra. Just to mention what is the Warp-Virasoro symmetry. Warp-Virasoro symmetry, which was introduced in this paper by the Tournay, Hartmann, Hoffman, 2012, is from the 2D point of view, from the two-dimensional conformal field theory point of view, is just a symmetry of a non-relativistic conformal field theory, because you don't have the right moving Virasoro generators, but you have just a current P, and it has been shown that this algebra admits three non-trivial co-cycles, which in this case it turns out that C and K is going to be zero, but kappa is survives. And then you can also, in order to confirm what we said about the Warp-Schwarzian, you can, or Warp-Virasoro group, let's say, you can also ask if you can write the finite form of the transformations that I just showed you. The finite form of the transformation would be this. So tau goes to f of tau, and P and T as two co-vectors on the coadjoint orbit, they will transform according to this transformation. And if you basically do the infinitesimal, go to the infinitesimal form where f of tau is tau plus epsilon and g of tau is sigma, you recover the transformation, infinitesimal transformations of the of this line. Okay, now I want to what we want to essentially obtain is the boundary action. For finding the boundary action in this BF formulation, what we can do is to translate first our boundary condition in the metric formulation to the gauge to the gauge theory formulation. So for doing this, I use a gauge transformation to get rid of the radial part of the gauge connection. Remember that the form of the BF theory is such that any gauge transformation, any finite gauge transformation, would preserve the form. So you are not going to lose anything by doing a gauge transformation. So I use a gauge transformation which sets AR to zero, and then upon that specific gauge transformation, A tau has a very simple form. So you should compare this A tau with the form of the metric, which was in the Bondi gauge. It was written in the Eddington Finkelstein gauge. This is going to reproduce the metric that I showed you. And B would also have two free functions, x0 and x1, which are going to couple to T and P in the end, in the variation of the action. And for the other components, P plus and J, P plus and J, I have used the field equations of B to write them in terms of x0, x1, P and T. The variation of the BF action is given here as B delta A. And if you write it down, this should be delta T, this is delta T and delta P. So this is wrong. This is x1 delta T minus x0 delta P. If you write it down, then you have x1 delta T minus x0 delta P. But this is, for sure, it's not zero. And once it is not zero, then you should not, you're not basically, you do not have a well-defined variation or principle. So you have to cancel this boundary term. You have to get rid of this boundary term. In order to do this, you add a boundary term to the action such that its variation would cancel this. This means that you have to make this boundary action, this variation of the action, you have to make it integrable. So for doing this, the boundary action can be written in terms of the free functions, the sources x1, x0 and x1, and the free functions P and T. But P and T, I can just write them in terms of the Casimirs of the action of the dilaton gravity, basically. In this case, I have two Casimirs, a linear Casimir and a bilinear Casimir, C0 and C1. These combinations are constants of motion in the dilaton gravity, in this CGHS hat dilaton gravity. So if you write everything in terms of C0 and C1, you have the variation, you can write the variation in terms of C's and some total derivative terms. So these two total derivative terms are not going to contribute. But the only thing is, are these first three terms. But the first three terms are also okay because one of them is basically a total variation, so it is integrable, and these two other terms are also integrable, providing that their variation is zero. But remember that C0 and C1 are constant of motion, so they can simply come out from the integral. So you're left with delta of integral of 1 over x1 and delta of integral of x0 over x1. So this means that only the zero mode of 1 over x1 and the zero mode of x0 over x1 should be fixed. This I wrote it here. So if I write the functions, if I identify 1 over x1, the integral of 1 over x1 as f, and the x0 over x1, the integral of x0 over x1 as the integral of x0 over x1 as g, then the zero modes of these two functions should be fixed. This means that they are either quasi-periodic or periodic. Now we know that f is going to play the role of the diffeomorphism on x1 on s1, which is a quasi-periodic function, and g is playing the role of the function on s1, which is remember that the warped Virasoro was diffeomorphism on s1 plus functions on s1. So you have these extra functions as well. Everything are determined in terms of the dilaton. And if you plug them in, so the boundary action that is going to give you to cancel this is minus the integral of, instead of the integral of 1 over x1, I just wrote df, because you have d tau, and 1 over x1 would be f prime, so d tau f prime, I just wrote it df. So it's integral of df c1. And then you get rid of these two terms, and the rest are total derivative. And if you go back and write this everything in terms, so you have c1 in terms of x0, in terms of C0, so C1 and C0 are basically in terms of T, X0, and X1. And if you also identify 1 over X1 as F prime and X0 over X1 as G prime and plug this in, you basically reproduce the warped Schwarzian action, where in this case, the Schwarzian term is zero, but this is not, I just wanted to write this, but now I cannot. But you can actually have the Schwarzian term in the game as well. So it's not, it is important that the level of the warped Schwarzian theory is zero, the term which was playing the role of the commutator of the P's. Is zero, the commutator of P is zero, so it's a warped Virasoro symmetry at level zero, but the Schwarzian term, in fact, can be non-zero. But essentially, the most important part is this term, which is associated to the second co-cycle of the warped Virasoro symmetry. Yes, thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I will be happy to answer.
Thank you, Hamid, for the talk. If anyone wants to ask any question, they can just go ahead and ask Hamid.
Okay.
So you mentioned about this CGHS hat. So what is this CGHS hat model, how is it different from the usual CGHS model?
Yeah, I just mentioned that CGHS hat is the model that I that has this BF theory formulation, which means you basically integrate in a gauge field C on top of the CGHS model. So you have the CGHS model. This is the CGHS model when Y is constant. But here you have another term, which is YDC, which of course, well, on shell, Y again is constant, but they are different off shell.
I see.
Right. So CGHS itself, which is usually called as flat space JT gravity, does not have this luxury that can be written as a BF theory. So we use the BF formulation to approach flat space holography in principle. In this case.
Okay, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
May I ask a question related to what was just said? Hi, guys.
Yes. Hi, yeah, hi, please.
So I was just wondering, so you mentioned CGHS hat as this generalization of CGHS that admits a BF theory formulation. But I mean, it seems like even removing this YDC term at the end, so returning to standard CGHS, In principle, you could, I guess, carry out a sort of boundary theory analysis as has been done for JT, right? I mean, essentially.
Yeah.
And is it clear that because of this extra gauge field, is it clear that the structures are going to be different for some reason? Or to the contrary, do you expect they're going to be the same? I think it seems like they're going to be the same in the end. But I mean, obviously, right. We have to talk about this. But.
Yeah, well, it is true that even without this YDC term, you can also perform the variation principle imposing the boundary condition and so on and so forth. But
hello.
Oh.
Yeah, so the thing is, if you would still, yeah, one thing that I should mention here is that the fact that this function here, sigma prime, is a total derivative term is partially because of having this gauge field C in the game. Yeah, if you exactly. want to preserve the form of C, then basically this function has to be a total derivative, which means it will not have a zero mode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in principle, if C is absent, at least at this stage, you don't need to impose such a constraint on this function.
Yes, that was my impression as well. And I think also in the variational principle, one of the zero mode constraints that you get, maybe you don't get it if you only use CGHS instead of CGHS hat.
Okay.
Maybe this goes beyond what you mentioned now, but I was just curious. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. I must say that I have not done the variation principle in the non-BF formulation. So it could be that, so here, as I just showed you, here you need to impose that this function does not vary x0 over x1. And this simply says that that sigma prime, which the finite form is G, does not have a zero mode, and this is simply because of the presence of that C, that gauge field C. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that C, then it might be that at least from here, from this point of view, you might relax this condition. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, I think there are no more questions.
Yeah, one thing that I'm working now on and try to find the generalization for this model is the higher spin generalization, for instance. It turns out that since you are in the gauge theory formulation, you can also add higher spin gauge fields to the game.
I see. So the action which you wrote down, that action is like related to some scaling limit of this SYK model. Is that the case?
Yes, that's something that I, okay. I did not found time to say. So, right. So here you see that usually for the SYK model, for the SYK model, you have the Virasoro symmetries, which is the first line here.
Yeah.
And in the complex SYK model, you have the third part as well. So P and P are going to give you K. Mm. And L with P does not have this extra term. Now, so phenomenologically, what do these quantities C, kappa, and K mean from the SYK point of view? C corresponds to, is proportional to heat, specific heat of the model. Kappa, well, we don't know what it is, but K is, this little k is zero temperature compressibility of the model, which is non-zero in the complex SYK model.
Okay.
Now, if you want to think of this model as a limit from a SYK model, it turns out the zero temperature compressibility should be zero. I think the heat, the specific heat can be non-zero still. I think, well, in the paper we said that it is zero, but I think we can relax this. But what is important and what I don't know still, I don't know, is this kappa, what it means really. It's from the thermodynamic point of view, it's a two-point function of the energy conserved current and the charge of the theory. So you have the charge, SYK, so the two-point function between the energy and the charge is non-zero, it's proportional to kappa. I don't know what that means from the phenomenological point of view. But one can think of sending C and K to zero and finding a scaling limit where kappa emerges somehow. This is the scaling limit that we discussed in the paper. But that scaling limit means that, first of all, the zero temperature compressibility is zero, and second of all, means that the specific heat, the inverse specific heat is zero, which means that the temperature of the theory is independent, is a state independent, which is actually from the gravity side completely understandable, because you're dealing with the near horizon physics and you're in the Ringler, like a Ringler. So you have the fixed Ringler, temperature. So the entropy is proportional to the temperature. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I think. Thank you for the talk. I think there are no more questions, so maybe we can stop the recording.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. And
Yeah. No problem.